recording myself now, so I'm doing that.
Perfect. Let's talk about your recent time in Maine, David. How was your Maine experience?
Magical, Rich. I feel like everyone should go. It actually was really nice. We are trying new approaches because all of the old approaches super duper stopped working last summer. The car that we were using died and we missed 2 days due to canceled flights. And we kind of didn't have very much left of our trip, but driving up to Hancock County from, Cumberland County, and then just moving a bunch of stuff around for my father-in-law, and then we just went home. So this time we did better this time. We did still move plenty of stuff for my father-in-law, but we were able to, you know, have a proper vacation as well.
Excellent. Now, did you get to watch any videos of note?
I got to hear a bunch. My father-in-law is, he's got the only wholesome YouTube algorithm observed in human history. Like, he somehow, it's the one time that that algorithm is not trying to be like, hey, do you want to try being fascist? Do you want to see if you like it? Maybe this video will help. For him, it is just people fixing old engines, using metal detectors, buying storage units, and then pricing the items in them, and then some other version of that. Every now and then there'll be some spammy thing that gets, you know, sort of horked up, but he tends to skip through it. And for the most part, I don't always like the engine repair noises in the background. If I'm like just hanging out and trying to read, there's more restful sounds to me than that. But the general vibe is very nice. And he's a really good dude. I mean, we go up there to play cards and eat sandwiches. And he's a good companion for both of those things.
And so how has the return been to city life and work, et cetera?
Sucked. Thanks for asking. I mean, it's normal. The issue for me was that during the time that I was in Maine, which was less than 2 weeks, simply through not being on my computer and phone as much, I could feel my brain becoming normal again, or not, you know, normal's a big word. I was less insane by a noticeable amount by the time we got back here. And then within a period of 12 hours was more or less back in the saddle. It's very hot and very humid when we got back here. My wife and I were just sort of doing errands and walking around the neighborhood. And she, who grew up in Maine, but has lived in New York City for longer than I have, was struck by how like smelly and dirty it was. And I kind of was too. Like, I'm used to it. I love it. I don't want to live anywhere else. I've lived here for going on 25 years. But if you spend enough time away from New York and then you come back here, you're kind of like, why is there mustard on everything? Why? How does it smell like that? Like, what are we doing? And it's all normal to me again. Like, I've acclimated, but the re-entry was a little rocky. I'm not going to lie about that.
David Roth with us, and we have assembled quite a group of outstanding scholars of the world of film. Carrie Haskell here, Alan Adams joining us, and the topic I wanted to cover is sports films. We've gone down this road a little bit in the past, but wanted to get your thoughts on some of the best sports movies of all time.
I'm happy to help. I actually just read a book on this subject by Noah Gattel, which I recommend. It's called Baseball the Movie, and it is about baseball movies. And I mean, a lot of those movies are bad, and Noah is good about pointing out when they're bad, but there's one in there that I now have very much on my list that I had not seen. I was curious if any of you had ever seen the movie Little Big League. Do you know about this?
No, I've never heard of that one.
Yeah. So, Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, no, if correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it's a young man inherits the Minnesota Twins from his grandfather.
Yep, from Jason
Robards.
And
makes himself the manager.
Yep, and so it came out the same summer as Rookie of the Year, which was also the same summer that baseball went on, like the strike happened.
Yep.
So disappeared without a sound. But the movie was written by a guy whose only other credits were Seinfeld. And it is apparently like super like saber aware, like advanced analytic baseball stuff, which seems astonishing for the 90s, but Noah talked to a bunch of Rani Jazzaghelli and a couple of like other, I butchered his name, but you know, Saber guys that saw it in their younger days and were shocked at how forward thinking it was, especially relative to like Rookie of the Year, which like can't even do basic baseball continuity stuff right. I wouldn't say that like Little Big League has rocketed to the top of my list. There's a bunch of movies that don't involve the Minnesota Twins that I would like to watch first, but it sounds really interesting. It's one of the few from that book where I was like, damn, I actually would like to watch an extra baseball movie.
You know, I'll say it's generally considered to have like, in terms of the quality of actual on film baseball being played, considered to be really good.
Yep.
Because a lot of the guys they had had some experience, or you know, a lot of the, and I mean they do this with a lot of baseball movies, but a lot of the non-speaking parts are actual ball players. You know, there's also like, I mean, there's an argument to be made that Ken Griffey Jr. is the villain of this movie.
He is,
which is pretty phenomenal.
Another thing that I loved learning about this movie is that Kevin Elster took a year off from baseball in the middle of his career to be in this movie because he thought he was going to stick a Hollywood pivot, and it didn't happen. But then he like came back, did the 90s thing where he showed up suspiciously larger than he had before and with a lot more over the fence pop, and completely reinvented himself as a baseball player, if not as an actor.
Wow. All right. I have to ask you guys about this one because you guys are younger than me. Everybody's younger than me. Where do you come down on The Sandlot?
So I have not seen The Sandlot.
Ah, okay.
I missed it. I am just old enough that The Sandlot was kind of, I don't know what, if I was watching Barton Fink and thinking about how smart I was when The Sandlot came out, but I did miss it. I was like, oh, yeah, I get it. I definitely see it. That's crazy. Hollywood's a weird business. But there was, so Noah hates it. It's the nastiest thing I've ever read about The Sandlot in baseball, the movie. It seems like it's sort of become the official baseball movie of MLB in a weird way that like I know the actors from it are always at a stadium throwing out a first pitch and getting a round of applause. Has no one on this pod seen it? Alan, have you? I know it's like kind of your job. So what do you think?
You know, it's like I have affection for it. Like you, I was a little too old to be sort of the target for it. But, you know, it's fine. It's very like it's, you know, if sepia tone was a movie, like it's kind of got that kind of vibe where it's just like this nice sort of like nostalgic look back at how great things used to be and how just a bunch of kids out there playing the game. You know, getting up to shenanigans as they run through their neighborhood and whatnot. It's fine. I don't, it seems, I will say I'm looking forward to reading this book now because it seems like a weird movie to inspire any sort of real vitriol, but like,
yeah. So he basically does the thing where he sees it as this kind of like a Disney-fied vision of what that era, which was, I guess like the early 60s were like, and like sort of, you know, in denial about race and all these sort of classic Hollywood things, something that is true of basically every baseball movie that's ever been made. But I was also kind of startled by it. Like the worst I'd ever heard anyone say about like The Sandlot was kind of like, oh, the dog wasn't realistic or whatever. Like, it's just not the sort of thing where, you know, there's a very large dog involved. That's not a spoiler. I don't think that's like,
no, I think you're good.
Carrie, like what about you? Old. What's have you got a favorite baseball movie, Carrie?
To be honest, it's probably, I mean, if you want to lump it into baseball, A League of Their Own is just one that I've always, I really don't know how many times I've seen that movie. It is, I really, you know, I really, really like that movie a lot.
Yeah, I think it's a really good one as well.
I mean, I feel like that's not a deep dive by any stretch of the imagination and probably on a lot of people's lists, but it is. Although the other one that jumps to mind is 42, the Jackie Robinson story. That was just a master. I thought it was a masterpiece of a movie. And I took my daughter to that movie and sort of warned her ahead of time about what she might be seeing. She was, I want to say 13, 14 at the time. but it was a movie that I felt like she should see, and I'm glad I did, and I'm glad I had the discussion ahead of time, sort of knowing what we were getting into.
I have not seen that either. I'm trying to think of like what the last actual sports movie that I, well, I saw, we talked about this, Carrie and Rich and I did, the movie Ephes. It just came out, I think earlier this
Oh,
year.
I
Loved
haven't seen
it.
it yet. I've heard it's
It's
phenomenal, but yeah.
super. I mean, it is really a different type of, because I mean, in 42, I think part of the reason I didn't see it is that like I, as a kid, was fixated on Jackie Robinson. I read I Never Have It, Had It Made. Like I felt like I sort of knew the story to a certain extent. Strong recommendation for that memoir too, by the way. A lot of really interesting stuff in it. But Ephes is like a baseball movie in the exact opposite direction. It is just a bunch of New England dirtbags playing a game on a field that is about to be paved over. None of them are that good. None of them are in shape. And it just sort of goes on into the nighttime after, you know, like beyond sort of all reason. It feels like baseball, and it also feels like it was made by people that really like baseball, playing it and watching it. Strong rec. And it seemed like it found an audience for a movie that was made on a microscopic budget and that has effectively nothing happening in it. So I found that really heartening. I don't know how many, you know, films I've seen like that had that sort of alignment with any sport. Where it's sort of like it felt like watching a movie, but it also felt like that game.
Now that reminds me of a movie, and I think Alan, we've talked about it before, but I love the documentary that was made a few years back, The Battered Bastards of Baseball, about Bing Russell, Kurt Russell's dad, and the minor league team that he bought.
Oh, wow. I don't know this story at all.
Oh, it's a wonderful story of a lot of outcasts that got together to be a part of this team and to save it through some unique promotions and just undying belief in Bing Russell's love of the game.
I know that Kurt has a baseball background. Like Kurt Russell, like maybe played organized like
On that
minor league
team, he
ball.
played on this minor league team that his dad owned.
Wow. All right. I will find it. I miss the old sort of, I think I'm sure that we've talked about this in the past. The sort of like when minor league baseball, like, I mean, there are still, you know, there's affiliated teams and there's independent teams. Like some of it has not changed, but where teams would just sort of move around all the time or be in places that patently should not have a baseball team in them. Like I remember that from just looking at the back of baseball cards as a kid and thinking about how big the country was. Like asking my parents where is Kinston? What is Kinston? And my dad would have to be like, I don't know. There's apparently a Cleveland affiliate there, but I have no idea where that is.
Away from baseball, I want to throw out a movie that's I count it as a sports movie, and it's one of my favorite films of all time, regardless of genre. I think made in '79 with Dennis Christopher and the great friend of downtown, Paul Dooley, Breaking Away.
Awesome movie.
Oh, yeah.
Cycling has always been like a different universe to me. It's just not something that I understand. And I've been interested in it. Like, I mean, the Tour de France is happening now. I've been editing our Defector has Patrick Redford, one of our co-owner writer guys, is
He's
in.
killing it right now
He's
with
doing
that, by
great.
the
He
way.
is there following the tour around, writing dispatches from it. I love reading it, but every name in there is more Dutch than the last. I don't understand what anyone's doing or why they're doing it. And so Breaking Away is as I remember it, I mean, there's a lot of it that is also about like, you know, growing up and being in a small town and all of that stuff is done very well, but like the thread of obsessiveness that runs through it feels to me like the thing. It's if I understand anything about cycling, it's that. It's that all of these people are pushing themselves in ways that are frankly unwise and impossible to parse from the outside. And yet, you know, there's a reason behind it.
We may have talked about this one before, and it's interesting to me. There aren't a lot of great football movies. Well, I was trying to think of them today, but maybe we've talked about North Dallas 40, but that's one that I think is underrated.
Yeah.
I'm a firm believer that the book is better, but that's because it might be the only good football book I've ever read, as far as fiction goes. But like, I mean, Nolte's great in North Dallas 40. Like, he's at the peak of his powers. It's before everything has fallen apart for him. So it's it's really kind of nice to see him kind of show out like that. But
Yeah.
yeah, I mean, I haven't seen that movie in a million years, but yeah.
I remember the book. It was another one that I read as a kid and was kind of like, because the book, kids should not read the book. Like,
No.
there's, it's written by a guy who played in the NFL, and it's like 1970s NFL too. So, as gross as things are now, like, imagine what it was like before anybody understood diet or exercise. Like, it was just everyone is suffering terribly and acting disgustingly towards each other. I do agree that it's a great, I don't remember the movie very well, but I do remember that it's like peak handsome Nick Nolte. Like, in the same way that you can basically divide Al Pacino's career into like quiet Al Pacino and loud Al Pacino, there's basically like Golden God Nick Nolte, and then there's the version of Nick Nolte from like a Sweet Hereafter or whatever, where he's just basically like teeth are just falling
That's
out all through. It's like, yes, yeah,
mugshot
but I sort of, I will put a qualified limited bit of praise in for Oliver Stone's Any Given Sunday, which is not a good movie, but does have 20 or 30 really memorable minutes in it, including a really good like loud late Pacino performance that's like totally out of keeping. He plays an NFL coach in that, and nobody has ever looked or acted less like an NFL coach than Al Pacino. He dresses like a guy who owns a jazz club in this movie. He's giving a big speech in front of his team, and he's got like a big red scarf on, and he's like, "Gentlemen." Like, it's, but and yet it still worked for me. There's enough. It is very like late Oliver Stone too, though. Like, the parts of it that don't work are insane.
Yeah, well, it's almost like the energy is right,
Yeah.
but like the actual like action within the film is either ludicrous or absent. Like, that's basically it. It's like remarkable feats of athleticism or Dennis Quaid like spraining his shoulder or whatever. It just, yes, I'm there with you. I li like
Yeah.
I have a fond connection to that movie, but I would never in any set of circumstances refer to it as good.
No, but tonally, I agree that it is like the sort of ridiculous overstatement and pomposity of it is, I mean, only Oliver Stone could make a movie that catches the vibe of the NFL, I think, like, for better or worse. And he
Yeah.
gets the vibe right, but basically nothing else.
Maybe because again, I'm a little older, but I have a soft place and a special place in my heart for this one, Slapshot.
Rocks. It's amazing. Slapshot and Bad News Bears are movies that
Oh,
legitimately you could not make these days because of woke. And I don't mean that in like a pejorative way. Like, they're amazing. It's just America in the 1970s was another country. I can't imagine a world where, like, not just where you're just making Slapshot and putting it in theaters, but where hundreds of millions of dollars worth of box office accrues to it. It's a very funny, very good movie. It is just also like unbelievably crude and dark by contemporary standards.
and Bad News Bears, that might be the best sports movie of all time.
So good. The less we say about the unfortunate
Oh gosh.
Richard Linklater effort to remake it. Well, I mean, it's a, I mean, I think it speaks to your point, David, that like you could like he, you know, this was what, 20 years ago? I want to say that movie came out in like 2006. Like even then it was like, oh no. This doesn't work anymore.
Yeah,
We
you
can't
can't.
be doing this.
There's so, this is as, I mean, this would be like the prepper. Well, we're all sitting here into microphones recommending the movie The Bad News Bears. There are so many slurs in that movie. It is a stop, even by 1970s standards, it is like industrial grade. And yet, I mean, it works. It all is, I would say that it's not gratuitous. I mean, like, it is all part of what that is. But yes, like, even when you swap in Billy Bob Thornton for Walter Matthau, which angst, you know, amps up the ick factor pretty high just on from Jump Street, the remake does not work. I liked Everybody Wants Some pretty well. Richard Linklater was like a pretty serious baseball player and a pretty serious, like, baseball guy, I think. And it comes through much more in Everybody Wants Some than you would get in certainly in the remake of Bad News Bears.
Any good basketball movies? I mean, the two that came to mind for me, Hoosiers, obviously, especially with, you know, the recent passing of Gene Hackman, and one I liked a lot, Hoop Dreams.
Hoop Dreams is amazing.
That's such a good movie.
Yeah, I would want to see it again. I have not seen it. I saw it in theaters. That was like the perfect sort of starting to get into movies, already extremely into basketball thing, and it blew me away. But that one especially, I think, is like there's never really been anything quite like it in terms of, I mean, sports documentaries now are the single most common bit of filmed entertainment that exists, as far as I can tell, and yet nothing that actually qualifies as a documentary in the way that Hoop Dreams does. I mean, it's just the sweep of it is amazing.
I've got fondness for movies like, oh, like Love and Basketball and Above the Rim, and of course Juana Man.
Timeless. It's really held up.
It's right up there with
honestly,
one of my favorites.
We didn't.
It's right up there with The Fish That Saved Pittsburgh.
Y'all, the 70s basket. Just in general, I mean, talk about the 70s being another country. Fish That Saved Pittsburgh is a basketball movie, right? But also, yes,
sort
what
of.
Is, like, what's happening there?
I can't even remember.
All right.
I believe astrology enters into it pretty significantly. Yeah,
very good.
Extremely. I remember that was one of the first times, I don't know how old I was, a teenager, I think, walking out of the movie and saying to the buddies I had gone with, I don't know if I like that movie or not. I'm not even sure I know what it's about.
Yeah. Always a nice feeling.
Yeah.
It's very formative. It's kind of, I mean, in some ways, that's like a good approach to keep bringing to art throughout your life, you know, is sort of being able to keep an open mind there. But you don't necessarily want to have your consciousness expanded by The Fish That Saved Pittsburgh. That's more than anybody signed up for.
No, I know.
See,
go ahead.
Steven Soderbergh's High Flying Bird. I did not see it.
You know, I quite liked it. But yeah, I'm in the bag for Soderbergh. So, like, yeah. it's tough because, like, I can't necessarily watch his films fully objectively just because it's like, oh, he made it on an iPhone. And it's like the third movie he made this year. Like,
yeah,
let's go.
He rocks. And I love what I sort of jokingly refer to as his post-retirement career, because there was a period of time where he was like, I think it was like after the Ocean's 11 franchises, where he was just like, I'm done. I think I've done everything I need to do. Movie-wise. And then he just started making movies at the clip that Alan described in various different ways, shooting them on an iPhone, shooting them, you know, like the most recent one, Presence, is like mostly shot through like more or less like just webcams, it looks like. Like there's a lot of really strange formal stuff going on there. High Flying Bird is not that. It's just one of those sort of like 85-minute entertainments that he made.
Yeah, well, I mean, it feels like he's just like this guy who, and I know, like, I'm sure we've all bemoaned the death of like the mid-level Hollywood movie.
Yeah,
but he just seems like the like one of the only guys who can get like a modest budget and like not only make it work but make a decent movie with it. Like, and you know, and he's got enough name where he can sort of draw enough attention to keep getting them checks, as they say.
Yep. Even though I think that. I don't know how well the films do or don't do at the box office. I know that they're like not expensive to make, but there is something about seeing a movie that is made competently, more or less for adults and with people that clearly are enjoying the process of making that movie in it. It shouldn't be as rare as it is. I know for a fact that I'm repeating myself now, so I will stop. But that is like very much my stance on Soderbergh as well. Long may he wave.
A lot of boxing movies through the years. Yeah, Rocky, certainly the first Rocky, terrific movie. Million Dollar Baby. I don't know. Is that a boxing movie? I guess so, but a pretty good one. Any others that come to mind?
Creed rocks.
Oh, I mean, Creed, yes.
Huge, but yeah. I thought it was great. I liked it as much as I liked Rocky. And I liked Rocky quite a bit. I thought that I haven't seen the other. I saw the second of the Creed movies. It was more or less fine. I don't remember anything about it. I know the third one apparently took a sort of weird left turn formally. That I think they let Michael B. Jordan direct it, and it got weirder, which is not necessarily bad. I just feel like the first Creed has like everything that you would want in a sports movie to me. like sense of scale, sense of how hard and how sort of dangerous all of it is, and then also makes you feel cool when you're watching it, which is neat.
Yeah, I don't know if any of you guys remember this movie. I want to say it was early '90s, and now, again, I'm not by any stretch of the imagination claiming this is a good movie. Anybody remember Digstown?
Oh yeah,
yes.
So I know of its existence, and the filmmaker is a guy. Who is that? Is it the? It's not Barry Sonnenfeld, but it's like somebody who I remember being like, "Oh, I like this director," and then I never saw the movie.
Yeah, like it's just one of those things. It just
Michael,
it was in
Michael
heavy
Ritchie.
Rotation.
Michael Ritchie, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was in heavy rotation on HBO, like when my family got HBO. And so like I've probably seen parts of that movie 50 times. So it has like it's taken up some pretty significant real estate in my head, despite the fact that, again, not a particularly good movie. It's got James Woods in it, which is not what you want.
From the director of Bad News Bears, the good one.
Right.
Michael Ritchie. Yeah.
Now, we'll spin off from James Woods because I think, again, David, we're going to get through a whole segment with you and not go to Trump world with this exception. I bring up, as we wrap, one of the worst sports movies of all time, but probably high on the list for the MAGA filmgoers, the 70s version of The Champ with future wingnuts John Voight and Ricky Schroeder.
Oh, that's nice. I didn't realize that they got into so young Ricky at the foot of the master, learning from John Voight about the perfidy of the deep state.
All there for you in the 70s. Yeah.
So is that what the movie's about? It's about chemtrails, you said?
Yeah. don't rent it. Don't spend the money. If you can find it streaming for free, that's the only way to go.
I will say that also, you know, whatever. All respect due to John Voight. I don't want to hear his opinion on any issue, but 70s John Voight is like about as handsome as you were allowed to get.
Good looking dude.
Yep.
Hats off. Man, Midnight Cowboy, giddy up.
Yeah, this has been a really great opportunity to remember some handsome guys from when Richard Nixon was president, and I think that's a really valuable service to provide to listeners.
That's what we try to do here on Downtown. David, thank you. Alan, Carrie, it was a pleasure. Let's do it again.